Welcome to Podcast on Fire 130, and it's something I've entitled Milky Way Treasures, and the subject is therefore for this show, this series, Beyond Hypothermia. We're doing a little bit of series here. It's been a while since we've done a series on the Anki show, and I do enjoy the random reviews that we do almost weekly, but we are embarking on a short series of forgotten or somewhat forgotten movies made by Johnny Toes and Waikawa's production company Milky Way Image. You know, that wonderful little logo. Can't describe it any other way. And primarily works not directed by Johnny Toe or Waikawa. Will be a large focus in this series. You know, we will reach a movie or two by that duo, and Milky Way was an exciting engine at this time when emerging on the scene in the mid-90s, 96 rather, pre and post handover. So we're starting with their first movie, I think it's their very first movie released anyway, and that's Patrick Leung's Beyond Hypothermia. And I am Kennedy, and with me is Tom KW.
Good afternoon.
It's sexy time in Saturday afternoon.
Sexy time. Sitting here in me pants, having a cup of tea. Just imagine that and just, yeah, enjoy that. It's an image to enjoy.
Drink your tea, Tom.
Oh, I spilt a bit.
Oh, it's not Sleazy K time. Get away, from me, that character.
This one's clean. This is the main show. Clean. Keep it
Run
clean.
Run away out of the room, Sleazy K. I will. I'm out of the room now. Good. Not schizophrenia at all.
No.
I'm mentally sound and stable and all of that. So, but we will be talking a little bit about this week in Sleaze in a short bit. First, the brief contact information. This is Podcast on Fire at the Podcast on Fire Network, the website for all the network shows, including this one, podcastonfire.com. Email if you want to contact us, leave us some feedback, criticism, constructive or otherwise. It's Stu reading it first, so he'll have to deal with it. podcastonfire@googlemail.com. The forum that is on the site, it's more of an archive now, podcastonfire.com/forum. You can't register, but if you did before, like Tom did before he joined the network as a co-host, you have extra access to the members only archive that contains quite a few hours of extra stuff that we did in the past. But we are posting our extra stuff, our exclusive content there of weight or of silliness. It'll be posted in the bonus episodes on the website, and check out that section and look out for more in the future. We have some things on Facebook, a good old page that you can like, facebook.com/PUF network, and we also have a growing Facebook group, which makes me happy. I enjoy it. And that you can find our discussion group by typing in Podcast on Fire Network in the Facebook search box, and just request to be added, and you're in. I'll easily let you in. It's not an audition process. Believe it or not. I did that in the beginning, but no.
Yep.
Not now. Sing, bitch.
Sent your VCRs too. VCR.
Send your, I don't have a VCR, so if you want to get in,
Send the VCR. It says to Ken because he needs a VCR. Yeah. But what am I saying? Other way around. I'm a mess today, Ken. I'm a mess.
Drinking your tea already. Fuck it.
Jesus, this vodka's strong.
Alrighty, and follow us on Twitter and Stu's exploits as well. twitter.com/podcastonfire. And I do my writing on sogoodreviews.com and video reviewing on sleazykvideo.com. And the latest at the time of recording, the review that went up, the latest is something we discussed on Taiwan War 2, but I did a written review as well of the Lu Xia fan movie on the Society File of Shanghai with the sexy cover with her in the with her being sexy and all of that. That cover is actually for a different movie, but I've seen the original poster for on the Society File of Shanghai, and it's similar, so they clearly like that sexy poster, and a movie or two afterwards did the same. So it's kind of connected, yet not. But it's a good movie. Not a sexy movie as such. It's a political movie and quite a dark thriller about uncovering scars, literally, on what the scars on her body meant. You know, what stories were behind those, what harsh stories were behind those. And she's excellent in it, and we talked of that on Taiwan Noir 2. that I hope you enjoyed with our added co-host, John Charles. And you can also follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/SoGoodReviews. And, Robert, I'm not like praising myself or anything, but I don't know why during the last few days there's been a rise in followers on Twitter. I don't know where that came from. It's like went up 10 or 20 during one day, which is very unusual for me. Very unusual, because no one in their right mind wants anything to do with my tweets.
It's because you put that Dark Knight Rises review up again.
I did.
I did.
Apparently. Yeah, so it's all good. So thank you for following me. And you can follow us on iTunes as well. Subscribe to the Podcast on Fire Network on iTunes and download it to your preferred device. But you can also stream the entire network, including Two-Fisted Podcast has now been approved for inclusion on Stitcher. So download Stitcher to your computer from Stitcher.com, but also go to your nearest app store and download the free application. And once you're in, type in Podcast on Fire Network and all shows can be added individually. And thank you for their support, and thank you for listening to us in any way, on the website, iTunes, Stitcher, what have you. Burnt MP3 files on CDs like good old Ian Davis did in the beginning, before he had broadband internet back in 07. So it's all good, we're all reachable. You talked of Little Big Soldier last time you and I spoke, and you did a review of Little Big Soldier as well.
I did.
Where, yeah. Tom KW, where?
V-Cinema, the website that good friends of ours. You got back in the saddle and decided to put my thoughts down and hopefully see a lot more from me. Fingers crossed, got a bit more time, so I'll be trying to get a few out. I've got one coming up that I don't want to spoil, but it should be a decent one for a film that we've much hated on the show before. So that's a little
we
tease
or
for you.
I?
Police Story.
well, I was thinking, like, is it we or I? If it's I, it's new fucking Police Story.
It is we.
Okay. We. Interesting. Looking forward to that. VCinemaShow.com is the website, and Tom's review archive you can access via a link in the show post that will get you to all of them, including the Little Big Soldier review. And good work, man. I read it.
Cheers, man.
It was great to hear some more extensive thoughts, and we only briefly chatted about it on the show, and it was good to hear.
I think it was worth it. Film was worth it.
Oh yeah, absolutely. So it was all good. Network updates, and we've kept a bit quiet, but not too quiet here on the network to focus more on Podcast on Fire, that show. So because we've done backup shows and what have you, and I'll explain more of that in a little bit. And we going back 2 weeks, we released another Tom on Fire discussion show, and it I was nervous as hell because you picked intelligent subjects, and that's not good for me, Tom. That frightens me, but I was glad to have you here to lead me through discussion of Hong Kong movies post 97 handover, which was the topic I dreaded because I thought like I was not going to have anything to say because I'm not knowledgeable, I think, but yeah, also right thanks to you leading, so I credit that focus on Podcast on Fire entirely to you.
It's a co-production, mate. I think I couldn't do it solo, so as long as you're there, I'm sure we can, you know, get something interesting to speak about, and hopefully people enjoy it, and the feedback has been positive. So, yeah, it's exciting, and I've enjoyed kind of having a creative control, but having kind of, you know, that's making the ideas for the show and kind of trying to spark that conversation, because I think it's something that I think you used to do a lot, but I think we're more concentrated on films now, so it's nice to kind of interject a bit of your conversation about the stuff we love rather than, you know, the actual films, but the production and distribution and stuff behind films rather than the films themselves.
I agree, and I think the reason I haven't been doing it is, one, I haven't been thinking about it. Number two, if someone said, like, come up with some topics, I would kind of be stumped, I think, because I'm not in that mindset, I think, so, which is why I think it's great that you took that initiative. And the topics Tom has come up with, it's only like scraping the surface because it came up with like 10 or 12 of them.
We've got a bit more to come.
Yeah, exactly. So it'll be fun. And the other half of the discussion at that time, which I was comfortable with, it was our take on if old-timey viewing formats are are still valid, if you will, and if the new viewing formats offer up, you know, any revolutionary viewing experience, which they don't, but they do as well, you know. So it's kind of an extension of what we talked about during the first Tom on Fire, our fetish, or rather my fetish, for an inferior product, as I quoted during a forum post that I quoted in the first Tom on Fire, which kind of made me angry at that time, but now I feel it's funny, and I stand by it. You know, what's fun to you is fun to you, and if you're getting a movie experience out of a VHS or a Laserdisc or a Blu-ray, great. You know,
if it's on Blu-ray, don't watch it.
Only 1080p full-blown HD experience, like that fucking tag says on even crappy Blu-rays. But occasionally some good stuff is coming out on Hong Kong. I want to just briefly single out, if anyone is doubtful about the Double Tap Blu-ray, the Leslie Cheung movie, they actually did a very good job on that one. It's actual HD. They didn't mess about with it. So pick up Double Tap on Blu-ray, which is a really solid movie, a dark Leslie Cheung movie, and good stuff. So I'm thinking of picking that up myself the next time I make an order from Hong Kong. What else did we do? Yeah, I mean, we debuted one from the backup archive, if you will. Not a cast from the past, which is our already recorded episodes done and posted before the website got cleared out, emptied by mistake. So we are posting those casts from the past as a way of getting them on iTunes again and stuff like that. But I wanted to create a little backup archive of fresh material. And last week was the debut of one such podcast of fresh material, as I, on my own, discussed the huge merits of Chang Che's The Duel, not Andrew Lau's The Duel, Stuart. And I sighed afterwards when talking about and having watched the remix funny dub version called Iron Fist Pillage, starring a rapper and voiced by a rapper that I don't know. God almighty. Yeah. Less said the better. So, we did another backup show as well during that time. It's me and David, Hong Kong Dave, finished off the Banana Ripening trilogy of movies, starting with Yester You, Yester Me, Yesterday, as we did on the show. There were three movies in that series about the same character. And this is, again, the Hong Kong version, if you will, of the TV series The Wonder Years. So it has that nostalgic feeling, and we finished that up in the backup archive with the movie Yesterday You, Yesterday Me. So look for those in the future when we are not able to sit down and record. And my belief right now, if we have the time to do it, is that you should get fresh content every week, or as much as possible. And that's all good. This week saw the release of another This Week in Sleaze, this time set in the stinky Tidy Whitey Theater. It should be stinky, I made sure of this.
Personally. Get the mop.
we recorded actually that show on Rock on Fire and Rebecca, aka Girl on Fire, by the way, for the first one. It was released as Girl on Fire in the UK. Recorded that a few months back, actually. I was kind of hungover. But that didn't stop us from having tons of fun, me and the great Lord Joshua Regal, because that show you can do kind of autopilot if you're a bit relaxed and even hungover, because there's no difficulty to channel the filth in you. You know what I mean? Because you don't need to be intelligent about it.
Ken, he said in our contracts that we can't podcast hungover. Promises.
Your contracts, you haven't read mine.
Oh, shit, okay. That one's got broken today.
But, it was good. It's good fun. We obviously prepped for the show. It's not like I didn't have anything to say, but I was kind of hungover. But my spirits were increased, and the spirits were out of me, and my spirits got increased during the show, and I got more perked up, if you will. And, you know, our show mascot now, mine and the great Lord Joshua Regal, is not Charlie Cho anymore. It's Stuart Ong, because these were two Stuart Ong movies, Rock on Fire and Rebecca, where he appears in a supporting role and a bit part in respective movies. And as I say during the show, and it corresponds to the role of Stuart Ong in those, quote, he doesn't care if they're dead or if they have VD. the Stuart Dong story.
On his gravestone.
his biopic as well. So, filthy fun for all. And but it's a good little show, so do check it out. And there's all stuff in the pipeline, of course. We are putting the finishing touches, but with no deadline attached to it, on the next director series, on Numb Night Choice, Erotic Ghost Story and Story of Ricky. That means we are bringing in Category 3 to the Podcast on Fire Network. In both cases, obviously, Erotic Ghost Story is free, and Story of Ricky was free as well, for sex and violence, respectively.
And rock and roll.
Yeah, we can always attach rock and roll somehow to it, so to make it really free, really strong free. And briefly also, Taiwan Noir has an episode 3 recorded. We talked about 2, but me and John Charles are planning the next one already, featuring more movies from my wife, Lu Xiaofan, from director Karen Yang, whose movie Deadly Darling we covered in the second episode, and we will have a discussion slash debate whether Girl with a Gun is a good remake or a rip-off of Abel Ferrara's Miss 45. And I stand by the fact that it's copied very literally, in a little way, but goddamn, is it good. It's really good. And Miss 45 is a classic, and you just don't copy by just following the movie and achieve the same effect. And they did a good job over there in Taiwan, a movie directed by Richard Chen. So that's pretty much it. Anything you want to say about what's going on, what's been going on as a listener or a researcher or what have you?
Podcast on Fire is awesome.
Okay. I can roll with that.
No, in all seriousness, it's exciting and lovely to see how big the show's gotten and kind of how just it's just its own beast now, and before it was kind of, you know, smaller, low-key show, and we had, you know, fans, and I was one of them, and now it's just a massive thing incorporating lots of different and great podcasters bringing lots of different things to the table. And yeah, it's good to see. We're a hard-working network with a lot of different kind of impetus, so it's lovely.
Yeah, I agree, and I pride myself on the fact that we are trying to provide a, without thinking too much about it, a wide overview of Asian cinema the way we like it, without much of a mission statement. This is just what comes out of us, in all honesty, it is. So good. Some brief last movies watched before we go to the main portion of this episode. It's been a while since I watched this, but I wanted to mention it because I love Jimmy Wang Yu. He might have been, well, it's very much true that he was a prick in real life and not easy to work with, the stories from.
George Lazenby thinks so.
Exactly. Well, the entire crew almost of The Man from Hong Kong didn't really like Jimmy Wang Yu, you know, diva personality and whatever.
We've got bad going on.
But the movie I watched, The Fast Fists, an early Taiwan movie from here, I usually enjoy the combo of Jimmy Wang Yu and veteran Taiwan director Ding Xin Tsai, but The Fast Fists was just incredible boredom, despite the female lead as well being a rather incredible presence and a looker. But that whole story about revolution and conflicts with authorities, you know, wanted to take down Jimmy Wang Yu's rebel while this female character, this opera singer, is finding herself drawn to him. It was not... That was boring, but there was so little kick-ass Jimmy Wang Yu stuff, because at least when he lets loose, at least you get that, but even that was kind of stale and boring.
Was there any fast fists?
Not really. I mean, sound
more like slow, floppy hands?
Yeah, but usually Jimmy Wang Yu can bring the fury connected to that. He was not a martial artist as such, but he could bring the fury. But there are better Ding Xin Tsai movies. He made a ton of movies. I mean, even in Hong Kong, he directed Whiplash with Cheng Pei Pei, which is a pretty furious movie, and just tons of great stuff. Classic Taiwanese director. And because he made so many movies, obviously there are a lot of crap as well. But moving on, Guardian Angel, this Yukari Oshima movie. That was interesting because what it is, you find out, and if you go to Hong Kong Movie Database, you find out as well, it's documented there, that it features new footage with Yukari Oshima mixed with action and sex from a Taiwanese movie shot the year before, called Sex Harasser. So it's Philip Koh who directed this, echoing his IFD days with this non-IFD cut-and-paste movie. That's about as interesting as it got. Because neither part of the movie, you know, Yukari Oshima's scenes and the action scenes and the action scenes in the other movie, neither, you know, thrill to any regard, at any level. It's just low budget action, you know, where we barely get any squibs either. You know, it's just, lacking energy, and Philip Coe couldn't really spice it up. It was curious though, because I'm not sure he did that. This cut and paste treatment a lot with movies when at this stage in his career, 93, 94, I think this was made. But it probably was fairly cheap. You know, buy a cheap movie, shoot some cheap footage, put it together cheaply, and get it out cheaply. And no one will complain too much.
Turnaround's got to be good.
Yeah, hopefully it was. And it's one of those movies that it was dubbed in English, so Yukari Oshima is credited as Cynthia Luster. Her occasional English name used on export prints, which sounds more like a porn name. I think some people have said that it sounds more like a porn actress than anything else. But I like it. It's good. And also, just to go a little bit non-Asian, I've started having this. We spoke of this on off air. This Laserdisc Saturday at my little bubble.
Legendary,
not really legendary, but it's a way for me to relax. You know, and I've had those for a couple of weeks in a row now. Watched Hard Boiled on Criterion, Laserdisc, and all of that, and some Italian horror movies. And I watched last weekend House by the Cemetery, Lucio Fulci's House by the Cemetery. And I've not seen that in ages. I did not remember anything from it, and that was such a pleasure to rewatch, because, man, that movie is creepy and atmospheric, and it's just craftsmanship all across the board, including the gore. Gore is fantastic in that movie, and I don't know. I enjoy when Fulci went the supernatural route a little bit more. That's why The Beyond is one of my favorite movies of all time.
It's slower, Fulci, but it's still really creeping kind of dread throughout the film. Yeah. So very effective. Yeah, he's and good at what he did.
Yeah, and I love any Fulci movie shot in scope as well. The City of the Living Dead is a great movie. I always wish that was shot in scope, actually. But it's a great movie. City of the Living Dead has the only gore effect in one of these movies that where I'm convinced actually killed someone. the drill scene in John Morgan's head. But we know John Morgan, or what's his fucking Italian name? Giovanni Lombardo Radice, or Radice, or whatever. He was in other movies as well. So, but fuck, that's so well made when they slowly drill him to death, you know. Because you don't get that obvious cut to the puppet. It almost looks like he is, you know, alive and screaming. And I think it's done with perspective shots too. When they shoot him from above, I think that's a trick shot, a perspective shot kind of. But man, Fulci on Laserdisc, that's enjoyable. So tonight it's Laserdisc Saturday as well, and it's probably Cannibal Ferox time, as we spoke of off air. So all good for Cannibal. So as you didn't have too many movies watched this week, you wrote a review after all, you know, so that's incredible news as well.
I'm off the hook.
Yeah, I mean, me, you don't need to do anything else during the show, really. You've done so well, but you are going to rule in the second half here, I'm assuming, when we start off our series on Milky Way Treasures. And it's fun starting a new series. I'm getting kicks out of that, and it's fun looking at these early Milky Way Image movies that people might have forgotten if they were late to the game, so to say, if they're new to the game in terms of following Johnny Toe movies and what have you. So we're going to take a look after the slight musical break at Beyond Hypothermia from 1996, directed by Patrick Leung and produced by Johnny Toe and White Cover. So see you after the break. Thank you. welcome back. And at the start of this series, Milky Way Treasures, which, you know, I'm saying treasures, but the movies, four or five movies that we cover, maybe I don't actually like them. Maybe Tom don't actually like them. You know, so it might be duds as well. You know, Milky Way Treasures or Milky Way Duds. Who knows? But in all honesty, yeah, and Milk Duds as well. But in all honesty, my focus is to bring out some underrated movies, and that means at least I like them. You know, so you know, to make kind of a serious statement here about our serious intentions with this series, I'm thinking that we're probably at least going to cover, obviously, this Beyond Hypothermia, Intruder, the Category 3 movie with Wu Qian Lian, which is a very much regarded nasty classic. A Hero Never Dies, the first movie Johnny Toe directed for the company. And at least Too Many Ways to Be Number One as well.
Boom!
That's just a great classic. But I'm thinking maybe if we feel like it, let's just fucking go up until the mission or something like that. You know, do Running Out of Time, do Expect the Unexpected, The Odd One Dies. You know, why not? I always like to run with it. But I want to hit Too Many Ways to Be Number One, and A Hero Never Dies, definitely. Those two are just classics. And you can't go wrong with Upside Down Cam in Too Many Ways to Be Number One. Triad Brawls, Shut Upside Down.
Amazing.
And Francis and the Lao Ching One, just, that's fucking fantastic, that movie. I love it. So much fun. But anyway, this is Beyond Hypothermia. Plot, Wu Qian Lian, who is the star of Phantom Lover and A Moment of Romance. That was a breakup. Breakout role with Andy Lau. She plays a Cambodian assassin with a rare syndrome of having a slightly lower body temperature of a few degrees. She also lives in coldness, literally, and longing for an actual life outside of this assassination lock, if you will.
It's a laugh.
Yeah. She lives near a noodle stall, which is run by former Triad Long Shek, played by Lao Ching-wan, and she starts to regularly visit him, and this low-key relationship between the reformed man and the assassin begins to shape. Wanting but not being able to reveal the truth about herself, her reality is slowly beginning to catch up with her and kind of trickle into his as well. And because the assassination of a Korean gangster boss, it goes as planned, but she now has a Korean gangster after her who wants revenge on whoever did it, you know. So her assassination business is coming to Hong Kong. Usually it takes place all over Asia, as we've seen in a few sequences. Anyway, Beyond Hypothermia was the first production to come out of the acclaimed Milky Way image formed by Johnny Toe and Wai Kar-fai that very same year, 1996. And Toe directed the big and expensive looking A Moment of Romance 3 the same year. So perhaps that is why we didn't see him straight back in the director's chair for the Milky Way's very first product. Instead, he held out for 2 years until he sat down to do the classic A Hero Never Dies. And it's a movie that divides people because they think it's almost heroic bloodshed parody, but I actually fucking love the choices in that one. Have you seen Hero Never Dies at any point?
Yeah, it's. I can see why people see it on that level. It's kind of taking the genre to its very breaking point.
Yeah, perfectly silly, perfectly. I love it. It makes me smile. Not like I go like all teary or anything. It just makes me smile, but it's a good thing. But for Beyond Hypothermia, Patrick Leung stepped into the director's chair, having previously co-written and co-produced John Woo's Bleak Bullet in the Head. He was brought in to helm his second feature, first being the boxing drama Somebody Up There Likes Me, starring Aaron Kwok and Sammo Hung as his trainer. Solid, but too melodramatic for my taste, in my opinion. He subsequently directed the acclaimed Task Force, which features actually a cameo by John Woo. An enjoyable commercial fare like La Brasserie, which is the movie where I took the name for my website from, because Lao Ching-wan and Louis Koo are continually in the movie saying, "So good." They work at this bra company, you know. I love that clip of Lao Ching-wan saying, "So good," and Louis Koo in the background saying, "I know." But it's a fun movie, actually. And he was Patrick was actually the assistant director for both multiple John Woo movies. I think A Bullet in the Head, actually. But also Johnny Toe movies he worked on as assistant director on the likes of The Barefoot Kid and The Mad Monk earlier in the early in the 90s. And on Milky Way, actually, you know, people might not remember that they, you know, they got praise, of course, and for their crime noir films and their action films that we all know and love, you know, The Mission and even this to an extent. But box office wasn't there. It wasn't there. We are talking flops here, I believe. And in a struggling Hong Kong cinema, just pre-handover and post-handover as well. They were ambitious, but the public was not coming in droves at all. I mean, this was not The Dark Knight Rises.
It was a good time for just the Hong Kong film business in general. So, unfortunately, I think they came just at the wrong point where everything was kind of collapsed. And it's a shame.
I mean, maybe they were actually anticipating that we are not sitting on a gold mine here, but we gotta do it. We gotta do it as creators and try. And, you know, A Hero Never Dies, Expect the Unexpected, if you will, subsequently, you know, the money wasn't there. So a lighter tone was injected in their movies, and it probably saved the company. And a lighter tone could be applied to movies like Running Out of Time and Needing You. Running Out of Time is a fantastic movie, but it is a lighter movie. Needing You is a romantic comedy with Andy Lau and Sammy Chang. A lot of people love. I don't particularly like that movie, but box office was there, and awards came flying at them. Running Out of Time was the movie that Andy Lau got the Best Actor at the Hong Kong Film Awards statuette for. And you know, this trend continued. Like they obviously liked getting money. And to, you know, finance latter projects or finance projects in between. You know, The Mission came in 1999. I don't think that was a success either. It's probably the Johnny Toe's most liked movie. But they couldn't, you know, make it for long if they made only what they liked, but nothing that the public liked. Obviously, they realized that as business.
It was a good balance with their release. It is diverse. I think people tend to think it is just the kind of the crime, kind of noirish things, but it is. If you look at the kind of their production list of things, it is very diverse.
It is.
But,
it is.
But every one of those films you have, you know, romantic comedy or something that's a bit lighter in tone. So.
And having said that, I mean, Johnny Toe liked his quirky humor anyway. If you look at PTU or The Mission, you know, he has tons of quirky humor, very low-key, very drab, dry humor. But so it's not like he was super serious and stoic and, you know, nihilistic and cynical as such, you know. You know, the scene of The Mission where they are kicking the little paper ball around, it's even been subject to parody in later movies. So I mean, it's an image that people remember. But that mixture, I mean, people, including me at the time, I was not very keen on their lighter movies. But in 2003, after like 3 years production period, you know, Johnny Toe is quite famous for shooting movies over a long period of time, or on and off rather. But in 2003, PTU was released, Police Tactical Unit. And via the election movie subsequently, it seems like the crisis was over. Milky Way began establishing a way better fan base, much better box office, and international acclaim as well. So it seems like they obviously are making different movies even nowadays, of course, but it seemed like they didn't need to, sink to that level anymore. And back then, when I followed this quite intensely, I was that cynical that I thought, like, this is just bullshit, you know, they're sinking to the lowest level possible. I did know that they had to do it, but I was literally quite angry at that. Nowadays, I don't really care. I realized that they needed to do it, but it's not movies that no one is forcing me to watch, the movies that I didn't like.
Yeah.
So, you know, The Likes of Fat Choi Spirit was a Lunar New Year comedy. Obviously, Lunar New Year is the time to get the box office in there, you know, and make a Mahjong movie. Everybody loves Mahjong.
Everybody loves Mahjong.
So of course they're going to make a movie like Fat Choi Spirit. So it's all good. I guess I can ask it at this point. I'm going to talk of the actors and stuff, but can you even pinpoint when you kind of discovered Milky Way movies, and did you discover the movies from this period first?
For me, it was sinking into Johnny Toe's filmography, and from there kind of travelling backwards, and then picking up the early stuff that was, you know, directed by other people, like Patrick Yeo, and just going backwards and kind of discovering the gems from the past. I think I got in with maybe Election.
Yeah, I was thinking that, because it got UK distribution and international distribution.
Well, Johnny Toe mostly, he gets a lot of distribution, because you have, I mean, on the we got Full Time Killer, we got Election, we got Mad Detective, Sparrow. So, I mean, I think in general, he's kind of generally looked after and gets releases. So for me, it was kind of jumping onto those and then working way back, because, you know, if you think about it, a lot of these early films that we'll be discussing and kind of, I mean, in terms of trying to find them these days, it's tricky, it's difficult, they're not as immediately available, which is
not even Johnny Toe has his own movies, I've heard, especially these early movies like Longest Night and probably this Beyond Hyperthermia as well.
It's strange to think we can access readily, you know, older films in the 80s in terms of Hong Kong cinema, more, you know, they're more accessible than stuff from the late 90s, which is kind of crazy to think about it. But yeah, stuff like you know, The Mission and Two Ways to Be Number One, and just if you just go through that very early list, a lot of them have had one initial DVD release, maybe in Hong Kong, and that's it. You know, that's it really, and it's a struggle to find them. And I think that's why, in terms of this period, it has its fans, but I don't think it's as praised as, you know, older stuff from, you know, Gold Harvest or Shores, which I think it should be, because I think they came out at a time when, you know, I think we discussed this last episode, it came out at a time where it was going to shit in terms of Hong Kong cinema, and they came and they still put stuff on the plate where it was still had with their own intentions and with their own creativity, and balanced it, you know, very well. Mm-hmm. And it's I'm looking forward to shedding light on these films, because I think they're not available readily, and I think a lot of people probably have just skimmed the surface and not really delved in yet.
It's a good point, because I think many people probably want to see them, but it is that the reason that it's not easy to pick up these movies. Some people might not, and I'm not being cynical towards you, but some people might be turned off by the fact that the only versions available are from cinema prints, from laser discs, you know, cheap DVDs. Some people might.
Fuck you guys.
Some people only want Blu-rays because you're dumb.
We are fans of Hong Kong cinema, and if that means I had to sit at my computer and watch a VCD rip in a fucking tiny portion of my screen with subtitles that are murky, I will do it.
Absolutely. Good man. But having said that, some of the DVDs weren't very well executed. I remember Hero Never Dies. You know, it's a fantastic movie on the DVD, but it has this weird flaw on the Universe DVD where one side is quite brighter than the other side of the letterbox frame.
That's crazy.
and the Mission was fucking the same. May I put off several DVDs? And it had like a embedded watermark, burn mark in the frame. No, not a watermark, like, here's May I, we own this. But there was something in the fucking background.
That's crazy.
It's crazy. But you know what? I love the movie. It deserved to look better, especially when you saw the fucking French DVD just blow everything out of the water, you know. Instant ejaculation when I saw that DVD. Fuck you. You know, the movie looked like it was made for like $10 on the Hong Kong DVD. It actually was very cheaply made. But then when you saw a remastered print in France, whew,
amazing.
You know, they made it was intended to look that slick, you know, and kind of like, you know, fool people into thinking this is high budget. And they did, as a matter of fact. But it was a wonderful movie on that floor DVD. So that's my point, you know.
Shantou.
Shouldn't hold out.
No.
As such. But anyway, and I don't know when I discovered them, but probably like picking up on the fact that The Mission was acclaimed, and sort of buying movies in bulk and eventually getting, you know, picking up on the fact that another Johnny Toe movie, another Johnny Toe movie. I like these. One more, you know. It was just gradually rather than me latching onto a big ass rep that I needed to be part of. It's just I just watched them and found out a little bit more about all of the players involved and the cast and crew by every movie that passed me by. I knew Johnny Toe, but I knew him for, you know, Heroic Trio and Ave Happiness and All About Along. You know, it's a Milky Way movies, obviously, because he's been an active director for many years. His first movie was in 1981. Mm. So, I mean, he's been active for quite a long time. So, and it shows no signs of stopping either, which is good for us. One actor that was in many of these movies was Lau Ching-Wan. And he became, you know, a steady lead for Milky Way movies. And in Hero Never Dies, with his fantastic cowboy hat, Expect the Unexpected, the cop thriller, The Longest Night, with his beautiful shaved head, you know. Not many people can carry, you know, that look well. If we're talking cinema, but fucking hell, Lau Ching-Wan, what a fantastic presence he is, shaved. And do you know who shaved him personally?
You?
No, Johnny Toe. There's footage of that on the DVD, on the Hong Kong DVD.
Crazy.
Yeah, a publicity thing where Johnny Toe shaved Lau Ching-Wan personally. Shaved his head, so that's fantastic. He was in Running Out of Time, and again, a lighter role. Fantastic, fantastic fun, that cat and mouse thriller. And he's one of Hong Kong's best actors, period, really. I mean, I really like to think he came into his own during this exciting period of the production company, despite working in a struggling Hong Kong cinema. Kind of a bad time to come into his own, critically, because no one wants to see movies as much as they should have. But he's gotten his, he's gone from strength to strength. Finally got his award, Hong Kong Film Award, with My Name Is Fame a few years ago, which was a role about, he played a struggling actor, and it was a very positive role. And I think it echoed so much about Lau Ching-Wan's struggles as well, to find acclaim and be a lead that brings in money. You know, he was in crappy comedies as well for a while, and it didn't really suit him. Occasionally it did. La Brasserie is great fun. Itchy Heart, I quite like. But otherwise, it really was an uneven stretch for Lau Ching-Wan. My Name Is Fame came around, and really, it was the movie he should have gotten the award for, and did. You know, it was fair.
Tailor-made, yeah, for what it seems.
Exactly. I love My Name Is Fame. It was such a positive movie. I love that Tony Leung-Gah-Fai played himself and a very positive character, a very encouraging character. Some Hong Kong movie profiles play themselves, but different versions of themselves. For instance, An Hoi, a female director, An Hoi, played a director in My Name Is Fame that only made action movies. Mm. So they kind of tweaked the images, but it didn't turn into a crazy time just because of it. They just did that because. But I love Tony Leung-Gah-Fai in particular in that movie. Just very positive. It just made me happy to see. Taiwanese actress Wu Qianlian, or Jacqueline Wu, or Jacqueline M, is sadly not appearing much in movies anymore, but after A Moment of Romance in 1990, she became a very popular and acclaimed actress, and not getting too stuck in wallflower-like roles either. A Moment of Romance isn't, because it's a very romantic film, of course, a melodramatic film, of course, but it's a very edgy and violent film, too. That she's very much part of, and Andy Lau, with Andy Lau. And, in particular from 1995 and onwards, in my mind, some of her best work can be found, such as in this, of course, Beyond Hypothermia, but also in Ronnie Yu's The Phantom Lover, and even Herman Yao's Walk In, where I think she's not in it a lot, but her character is, because I think she takes her own life at the beginning of the film, but her soul takes over Danny Lee's body. And then some craziness ensues. It's actually a very creative little film, Walk In. And I'm looking forward to rewatching that. But one of my favorite roles, and one of the more daring roles, was in the nasty Milky Way Category 3 thriller Intruder, where she plays this mainlander who terrorizes and tortures Wayne Lai's character. Wayne Lai is in a wheelchair, I think, and she tortures the shit out of him just to, I think, to steal his identity in order for her husband to be able to enter Hong Kong smoothly with her. So obviously it symbolizes mainland to quite a grave extent, but it's a nasty one. You know, graphic, yeah, but not, you know, wall-to-wall gore or anything, but just a nasty atmosphere. And she is evil in that movie. No two ways about it, but I love that performance. It's I love that she did it with all her entire being, you know. She didn't hold back, but that doesn't mean it turns into an over-the-top psychotic behavior at the same time. You know, that beauty can still hold darkness. And Intruder is one of the Milky Way movies. I think it's one of the more obscure ones, actually. Availability is low, of course, but it's one that is less talked about, despite even in fan circles. Looking forward to rewatching that. So we are at the review of Beyond Hypothermia, and I'd like your brief opinion first, Tom. What did you think?
Mixed bag. Real mixed bag for me. Loved some of it, and really just was kind of turned off by a lot of it. So it's an interesting film. This is my, I think it was second time. I think I'd maybe watched it and given up on it the first time. And this time I actually sat through it and kind of just really kind of tried to get my thoughts on it. And yeah, I do love a lot of it, and that's mainly the scenes with Lao Ching-Wan. And I think the character's name's Cheng, Jacqueline Wu plays in this, which are just pitch perfect, real, like, beautiful, but everything surrounded it, you know, even Jacqueline Wu's solo scenes and the assassinations, I just found dry, man, like, really, like, plain, and the main plot itself just wasn't very intriguing or memorable. Like, sitting down again, I kind of realised why I kind of had turned it off before, because it just didn't quite grab me. And again, same again now. It's not a poorly made film, it's just I don't think it's, there's nothing kind of lively about it for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I actually agree. Still, it was a mixed bag for me back then, and it still is. It's an on and off assassination slash human thriller that works mostly, or even it works the best, when facing away from all of that and just focusing on Wu Qianlian and Lao Ching-Wan, because they're wonderful together.
Yeah.
And I love that little story, the way they discover each other. You know, when they are in center stage, we're in very good hands. But everything surrounding it is okay, but it isn't making it a thorough classic as such. But having said that, she is so iconic in pretty much everything she does here. I mean, she's incredibly beautiful Wu, obviously, but then when you're also shot by Arthur Wong, then you're bound to look iconic here, you know, with the long hair when she's in sniper mode, you know, facing down the scope and her long hair flowing, you know, that's just fantastic stuff. And the opening in the ice factory, she's her setup to her setup is in an ice factory. You know, she's walking in high heels and those around it. It's like, it's just stylish just because, but fucking hell, I like that. And there's the stylish shots of the gun unwrapping. You know, Arthur Wong is going to town here. But is that going to fit in beside a human story, you ask yourself? And it doesn't, but the human story is good.
Yes,
you know, agreed. So yeah. I like that it took off well when eventually focusing on that. It's a challenge I like, and it's pulled off fairly well. And so, you know, you have some cool shots, obviously, in the opening assassination scene, which any good assassination movie should open with. And I can't say, you know, I'm weak for that shot when the warm case falls out and sinks into the ice, you know. That's just cool, man.
Literally.
But, exactly. So I mean, it's very on the nose, all of this, but I don't mind it. And one thing, I don't know if you thought of this, but I did during this viewing, I like that they don't linger a lot on setting up how she feels, what she wants to feel, you know, when she passes the playground, for instance. You immediately pick up on the fact that she's longing for something else. And that I liked throughout the movie, that they didn't need to, because of skill, involve a lot of expository dialogue and scenes about how she feels. So just minor glimpses and you get the entire picture. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's just, it's kind of, it's good. I mean, that's, you know, good filmmaking. It's brief moments that kind of stir up emotions in you without having to say it during the film, which there are moments, a lot of moments like that, especially regarding her character. But yeah, I mean, going on to a main gripe with it is the actual title itself. You got Beyond Hypothermia, and it's her body temperature being low. But what really did that have to do with anything during the film?
Nothing, it feels really nothing
at all. So it feels like, you know, this is the film, this is the title of the film. You think, expect it to kind of come into play at some point. There's something, you know, that would you, it would use that plot.
She gets
point,
stuck in the ice during the assassination attempt.
She gets
no, not again.
She gets, you know, during the film, she gets a bit cold, you know, she gets a bit of frost on her hair, and I think that's really kind of touched upon, and that's it really. It's not touched upon again, it's said here and there between the characters, but it doesn't come into play at all during the film. I'll be curious to know, do you know the Hong Kong title, the Cantonese title, Ken, of the film?
It has 32 in it, so obviously 32. They do reference her lower body temperature in Fahrenheit, I guess.
I was thinking it might possibly, you know, be kind of lazy titling on, you know, the kind of the side of, you know, coming up with an English title for it. But if it's in the actual title itself,
I don't think
itself,
so. I think they wanted to connect the symbolism of her living in a cold world, literally, and wanting something warm in her life. While I dislike that symbolism a little bit, I don't think it goes anywhere. When she enters the warmth, that, you know, interacting with Lao Qingwan more and more, I think it does work. But I wasn't thinking about it all throughout the movie. Like, you know, it didn't really matter to me to have that as a background element, the Beyond Hypothermia thing. But I do agree, it's not very necessary, you know.
No, it's just not. And it touch upon those scenes with Lao Qingwan, just an immense talent. I really don't have to say it. You know, we kind of know. But the guy is so natural and charming in the role. I didn't believe for a second, he couldn't knock me up some cracking plain noodles. You know, the part where he's trying to get, you know, Cheng to come up to the roof with him was just like, it's really cute. And when he gets up there,
he set up a swing for her because they have a brief exchange. I think it's him that asks her, do you like to ride swings? I don't remember now, but it's one of those. They have so little exchanges together, you know, barely a sentence. He barely gets a sentence out of her because she is shy and she doesn't, you know, it's all new to her. You know, this is learning from scratch to interact with a human being.
It says so much, though, you know, kind of from no, there's little dialogue which just says so much. And then when you get the moment where they do finally kind of connect, it's really rewarding. And it's a shame that the film wasn't more kind of, you're focused on that, because you can tell he's so happy, but he's not overreacting, and he just has, like, you know, that thing that great actors have, that subdued bubbling charisma that's not over, it's just there, kind of, you know, below the surface, just ready to come out. And it's just really cracking. And when it does come, that kind of that moment, it really hits you and goes, yeah, you know, they feel real as a couple. They feel like, you feel like something's going on there. It's a shame that the kind of the plot around it is just so, it's just by the numbers. It's just such a basic by the numbers plot, really.
Yeah, I agree. And it's their movie. It's thankfully also a short movie, so you kind of 81 minutes only. I mean,
yeah. So it flies by. I mean, I was never particularly bored. I mean, I think there's a midsection with our main bad guy, played by like a Han Choi Sek, which looking it seems to be his only film role, which is
not a loss at all.
Not a loss at all, really. he's a cartoon cliche, you know, including kind of bad haircut, and he does the classic walk away while something blows the fuck up and not look at it. And that part of the that midsection with him killing the gang it just felt shooed in, and I wasn't really interested in it. I mean, although it did have an impact on the storyline, just didn't care for the plot involving him and her. It just didn't do anything for me. It was really just there to serve as kind of, you know, a foe for them to deal with.
Yeah, I agree. I will get to some more notes about the Korean gangster movie in between. I think it's actually a Korean co-production. Yeah. I heard also, so they're involved. But I love the little moments, but that in her apartment, actually, by herself, you know, she almost, like, clinically, in a routine way, goes to bed like a robot. you know, it's I love those little solo moments with that Wu has, and there's no dialogue, but in a dialogue, you know, where she talks about having watched Lao Qingwang for quite some time, you know, and her new tack is to, after killing, fill up with food in this case, you know, rather than going back and feeling empty. And that's I like that connection too, because it's so well made, their sections together, so that actually works. That connection is really fantastic, and Lao Qingwang is adorable actually, because he talks and talks and talks and talks and talks, and she doesn't, you know.
Yeah.
He you don't even know, I think, is that, or he doesn't rather, if she speaks Cantonese or not, but he just babbles. He shows this old picture, and thinking, then subsequently that it bothers her, and he puts it away. But then she shakes her head, no, it doesn't bother me. But she doesn't say that, and then he snaps back again, and like still talking about the picture. He's so adorable, like a little kid. Like I want to tell you stuff now.
He's like a kind of a big kid with it, and there's never any. Because when they get together, there's never really any kind of, you know, seediness there. You know, he's not a lech, you know, he's not a perv. He's genuinely like a romantic guy, and it almost seems like sex would be the last thing on his mind.
Yeah.
It seems like he's genuinely there to be romantic, and he's a caring person. Because as you see, his kind of interactions with his customers as well, and he's just like a really kind of nice, kind of timid person. And then obviously having this relationship with her, it just. Talking, and it's a different take on the kind of romantic relationship in these type of films. That she's quite cold, she's quite collected, and then you have the guy who's more talky, and, you know, trying to woo her. It's almost like it flips it, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I look at that scene where she kisses him, and she's the aggressor, because she doesn't even know about physical stuff like kissing, it seems. She's the kind of aggressor awkwardly, and he's quite awkward about being pushed up on the wall on a table, you know, but she doesn't know. It's awkward to her. It's so new, you know, learning that from absolutely scratch, and she's just been brought up this way, you know, which is, you know, a bit disturbing. But and it could have failed if the right actors weren't in these roles, and we do get the right actors in the role.
We do.
And as you said, you know, we're one wrong actor for the role is that Korean actor and the Korean section altogether. I mean, okay, it is violent. You know, the movie isn't shy about its violence. We got gory headshots and all of that. But then you get the first image of this guy. You know, his I guess simplified name or another name for the actor is Han Sang-woo, I think, anyway. I don't really care. he looks like fucking Aaron Kwok at one point, you know, with the hair over his eye, you know. It just looks absolutely forced. The cool is forced. The hard exterior is forced. You know, I didn't buy for a second that he was a cool-ass character with his two guns. You know, you're not shy and fat, a Korean shy and fat. You're not even Aaron Kwok. And he's after revenge for what killed his boss, and, you know, blah 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 blah. It's just bland, and it all only comes to life a little bit when he comes to Hong Kong, because you get some very violent sequences. He seeks out her Wu's employer, the female employer, and at one point, without spoiling too much, it chops her fingers off, and that's rather, you know. That's rather cool, you know. It's a brute force, but then again, on that brute force, there's a narration at the top of the movie where we see parts of the last scene. It starts with a scene with him injured and all of that, and there's been violence going on. And there's this brief narration from him where it seems like he comes off more soft and understanding.
Yeah.
So is this like a journey from brute force to soft and understanding? I don't know. I don't care. That didn't matter either. To have one voiceover from him, and that's just completely pointless.
It just doesn't. His character wasn't made for that. Like, I don't understand. We don't go on a journey with his character. We don't learn anything about his character. His character doesn't have any kind of, you know, conclusion. So I don't understand why they felt the need to introduce the film with that and then finish it on that.
maybe due to the Korean money, if that was indeed true, that this was a Korean co-production. Just we got a guy here that we want in this movie. Him? Yeah, him. He's cool. Look at that. He looks like Aaron Kwok. You know Aaron Kwok? Yeah.
Why has he only got one eye? It's true. It could be, you know, we could be talking kind of, you know, filmmaking here, but really it could be kind of what's going on behind the film that's you know, that we have these kind of silly moments like that, which felt unnecessary.
But the sole good scene with him actually is when he's tracked down Wu and he's actually sitting in the same restaurant as her, and he knows that whoever calls is calling her, and therefore if she attempts to answer the phone, then he's got her, and that happens, and they start blasting away in the restaurant in a pretty solid action scene. Yeah. That's the only time where I didn't think of his clownish presence.
Well, it's that scene where he kind of kills his bosses, and his bosses tend to, like, you know, you need to kind of go back to Korea because your wife is in danger or something, and it's just so just generic. Like, he turns around, blasts them all, and then just fucking strips his shirt off and starts rubbing ice on his nipples. It's just like,
yeah, there's some dumb slow motion moments.
It's just it's like, why is it in slow motion? Like, is it supposed to be, like, you know, erotic? Like, is it supposed to be kind of, I don't understand. It's like they tried to kind of glamorize all these shots with him because they were either trying to sell him as a star, or as you said, Ken, that they wanted to kind of put this guy in, and kind of because it was a Korean co-production, and it almost seems like that was getting in the way of the kind of awesome parts, which were the parts with, you know, our two kind of Hong Kong leads.
And when Arthur Wong and Patrick Leung puts Wu Qianlian in slow motion, that works pretty beautifully. She walks away from a violent scene, all drenched in blood, and there's papers in the background and stuff like that, you know, or money even.
It's the money, yeah.
That works, because it's her. It's a better actor.
Yeah, you know? I mean, this film kind of goes from kind of image. It works on imagery alone. Sometimes I say the opening kind of assassination sequence, with the ice and that scene you just mentioned, and it's almost like a series of snapshots throughout the film of, like, really cool kind of cinematography, but again, that alone is not enough to make an entertaining film.
Yeah, I mean, I do think it's entertaining, but overall the flaws are very, very apparent, and you know, but thankfully we get snapped back into the better scenes, you know, and it's believable throughout the movie actually that Lau Ching-wan will do anything for Wu's character. You know, he's naive in a way, because love makes us somewhat blind. That's not a cliche. We are blind. And as you said earlier, it has nothing to do with sex either. You know, he will do anything for her. He feels attracted to her, and they have these silly but wonderful moments, like riding in a little rubber boat down this rainy street together. You know, that's just fun. You know, they're kids. Yeah. But all that is going to obviously be broken up into violence. And if anything, again, the Korean actor injected into all of this, speaking specifically of the finale, doesn't work, but there is compelling violence here and compelling bloodshed and gruesome violence as well, you know, and especially that scene that is referenced at the beginning, obviously it's the end of the film as well, that urban violence is kind of, I think, a slight nod, or maybe a firm nod even, to the car jousting scene in Bullet in the Head. The way the cars are kind of smashed together and almost melted together. It's not a huge chase, this, but after a while, all of these cars involving all these characters are essentially like stuck together.
And it's a great sequence, yeah.
And bullets are just exchanged, and a lot of characters are hurt. Like, that scene, and I'm not going to say who are in it, where characters are just stuck in a car and getting shot. They can't move. They can just sit there and getting shot and shot and shot. And I like that. It's a bit too shaky, but the chaos is compelling. I mean, you know, that bloody violence is chaotic, and they kind of sell that well.
Did you feel the tragicness of the climax was, you know, necessarily earned, though, Ken?
A bit, in all honesty, a bit. Yeah. Because, you know, it's no surprise that all of this involves Wu Qianlian and Lau Ching-wan. So I think I was okay with it. I wasn't taken out of it, definitely not.
No, yeah, I felt in some ways, I think if we'd have had a stronger kind of cast I'm not talking, you know, aside from the two main leads, I think it would have felt a bit more earned than it does. It feels a bit kind of, yeah, it didn't have the kind of impact that I wanted to have, because I didn't feel like there was enough danger there. I didn't feel that the kind of back characters were kind of strong enough to really kind of put that impact there. Mm-hmm. Which was a shame. And I kind of felt like it, like maybe because of what had happened, I think a lighter kind of, maybe more kind of fulfilling ending would have suited the film more. Mm-hmm.
I can definitely see that. I just felt that the strongness of them as a duo still made me like be on board for whatever shot they were involved in, essentially.
Yes.
So any cutaway to anything else, boring. the cut to them, great. We're back.
Yeah, the finale was pretty superb. There is some good like car action. There's a live action version of like Frogger, but replacing the frogs with Asian men in suits.
Yes.
About half an hour in, which just came out of nowhere. I think because I was so kind of bored by the events taking place with these guys and the fucking meetings and stuff like that, and then all of a sudden you get these guys just getting completely just fucked up by cars. It's like, whoa, where did that come from? Jeez, like really like decent action like throughout, and that was another highlight. It's sporadically entertaining.
Yeah.
I think, as you touched upon, Ken, is the only way I could kind of describe it.
And 81 minutes is not a challenge for anyone. No. You know.
It flew by, to be honest. There was not, you know, even though I was kind of bored, it was like boredom. Another scene would come along that was great, and it would kind of switch from, you know, good to bad like throughout. So yeah, I mean, it was a bit schizophrenic, but still, the parts that were good.
Have you seen much of her movies, by the way?
Jacqueline Wu.
Yeah.
I've pretty much, from what the films I've seen, I think this is the first film I've actually seen her in the lead, possibly.
Seen A Moment of Romance?
You know, I have, yeah, aside from A Romance, I think mostly I'm familiar with stuff that, like, God of Gambler's Return.
Yes.
Treasure
Hunt. She plays a little guitar. She adores Dosan, God of Gamblers.
And stuff like Treasure Hunt, Peace Hotel.
Oh, she's wonderful with Chow, in fact, in Treasure Hunt.
Yeah, really good chemistry with Chow as well. Stuff like that, yeah. I think, aside from her romance, is the first film I've kind of really seen a kind of meaty kind of lead role from her. She does what all the best kind of, you know, actors do, you know, balance kind of complete beauty with real kind of, you know, the talent to back it up with.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the filmography is not superbly long, but there are so many, you know, if the movies aren't great, she is always memorable in them.
Yeah.
And she, you know, even working with Ang Lee, Drink Man Woman, she was in, and Barefooted Kid, I remember she was, also good. And I mean, the standouts are really like super, super superb. And then if we are talking medium movies, she always came off as memorable. And again, not being slid into that wallflower role necessarily. I never got that impression of any movie, really. I just love movies like Dream Lover, really surreal Dream Lover with Tony Lungafi. That's just a wild ass movie that I've talked about it on the Podcast on Fire show before, but that's a wild ass movie to see. And 18 Springs and Peace Hotel she's in as well.
Yep.
And Phantom Lover with Leslie's it's good stuff too. So and actress clearly not afraid to go to dark places, even if it didn't mean furthering her superbly commercially. And Intruder is certainly one. Beyond Hypothermia turned out to not be a good commercial decision or anything.
Yep.
It's memorable. She's memorable for it. You know, her dedication is definitely there.
I wouldn't say the film's memorable, but she's memorable in it, and her scenes with Lan Chin Wan are memorable.
Yeah. So so my notes here before I finish off my notes. On the custom DVD that we watched, there is a track on it that is mostly Cantonese and Cambodian and Korean, but all the inner dialogue by characters, by Jacqueline Wu, and the brief in a dialogue by the Korean Aaron Kwok, is dubbed in English. And I had no fucking idea where that came from, where the logic behind that came from, where, because she clearly can speak Cantonese in latter scenes. It's not like they're setting up her up as a primarily English speaking assassin. She's from Cambodia. I mean, of course, yeah, it's very, very strange, and it's accented too, so they like try to make it part of her character, you know. So the dubber has a Chinese accent, if you will, and same with him for his one piece of narration, which is pointless. I don't know. There's a full English dub too that they made, but
which was for the US DVD.
Yes. So what I'm talking about is something that I think was on the Spanish DVD originally, a DVD that's not English subtitled, because if that would have been English subtitled, that would have been a good addition to get. But here we are at the problem here, as we said earlier. VHS, VCD, Laserdisc, all good. And the basic DVD from the cinema print came out, the mainland DVD, that was in Cantonese, or that mixed language track was in there. But then you only have dubbed options, partially dubbed, unsubbed options, so there's never been an ideal release subsequently after the local releases. And it's a shame, because there is a beautiful remastered print out there. Really good looking remastered print out there.
Yeah.
But there you go. It's sometimes the fates of Hong Kong movies. And I'm sure the file sharing community is where you can get a suitable edition, you know, from VHS, VCD, or Laserdisc, and that I'll promise you that'll be fine, absolutely. As a viewing experience, to try it out, and after that, we'll see what your opinion of the movie is. Obviously, you listener. but a final note: actually, a movie that came out the year before, I heard, but I'm not too sure about this, was Johnny Toe essentially testing the waters to make. To like make a Milky Way-ish movie, to make it like a darker movie, a more violent movie than we're used to from Johnny Toe. And it's a movie with Lau Ching-Wang called Loving You, with him and Carmen Lee. So I remember it was very, very good. And but it was not a Milky Way production as such. So, but I do recommend trying to track down Loving You. It's quite good. And Lau Ching-Wang is as good as ever as well. So a cop thriller romance kind of thing, but yes. not generic as such, because the players involved in that one felt inspiration, actually. So that's the end of my notes. What else do you got, Tom, if you have anything?
Yeah, that's about it, mate. Like I'm reading reviews for films after watching. I've heard comparisons to The Killer, which I don't see.
I think I did, but not necessarily a firm comparison to The Killer in my review. It's an assassination thriller.
Yeah, which you know is you could compare it to Leon in that respect. It's like, you know, yeah, it just it there's no, for people that are just saying, for people that are expecting a kind of killerish film, it's not really, it's you know, I don't see any kind of similarities between them aside from them both involving assassins.
I mean Johnny Toe and Company, I think, were the way they across their various movies, especially in A Hero Never Dies, they were looking at, okay, how the heroic bloodshed genre 8-10 years before, that was cool, but let's make it like we feel like it can be made now, because I'm very convinced that they are trying not to channel, but they were continuing the tradition of old heroic bloodshed movies, but because they weren't made in 97-98, you know, A Hero Never Dies is hitting upon those themes, and people may feel like it's a parody, but I still feel it firmly works, and it's well made too. That is my final note on it. They are not making copies of or lame channeling of John Woo's type of action. It's not that, but
no,
it's the feeling, the theme of it all is present in these latter day latter half of the 90s type of movies.
And
when you come to The Mission, you realize that Johnny Toe is doing something else entirely with his type of gunplay. Everyone is standing still, shooting every now and again. You know, all quiet, and then quiet for 10 seconds while everybody's standing still waiting. Another bullet. So you know for a fact that Johnny Toe didn't attempt to be John Woo or anything.
No, I think. I mean, that's a completely whole conversation on it unto itself. But they're completely different in just influences, and well, not completely different, but yeah, just different in influences and kind of the way they present their action and the way they present their kind of humor story as well. Completely different. Mm-hmm. But both were, you know, great directors.
Yeah, and not necessarily a lot. We didn't get a whole lot of movies that were like that. I think like the two ones are essentially Here and Never Dies and The Mission, and the other ones are other genres, you know, thrillers or what have you. The Longest Night is not a John Woo movie set in the latter half of the 90s. Expect the Unexpected isn't either. It just has violence. A lot of those movies have violence, and Longest Night and Expect the Unexpected, holy crap, are they violent. Yeah, it'll be fun. Next time around, I'm thinking, if we're going to follow the timeline somewhat, I'm thinking that it's either Too Many Ways to Be Number One or Intruder in the timeline. But you know what? I'm feeling like Intruder should be next, just there because it's a fine movie and it has it's another director as well, Tsang Kang-Chung, yep, which is more known as a screenwriter for Stephen Chow movies. That's his only movie as director, and what a fantastic movie it was, and a dark movie, and looks fantastic, and it's a I like to do Intruder next, so
looking forward to seeing it. Really cool to seeing it. It's one of the ones that has kind of been sitting on the list of these kind of from this period that I haven't seen yet, so I'm really looking forward to seeing.
And we got an uncut DVD in circulation because the Category 3 version was still lacking some violence, and the subsequent German DVD, which has English subtitles though, was working from an uncut print with a few more seconds here and there. So
nice.
because it's merely for violence, this movie got its free. It might have some nudity here and there, but it's not a sex thriller or anything like that. It's just a nasty terror ride, which doesn't skimp on the violence, but isn't as violent as you might feel when I'm speaking about it, you know. It has to do with atmosphere and choices and cinematography and effect.
Very intriguing.
Yeah, so I like it. You might think it's shit, Tom, but you know what? It's, that I can't help. You know, I'm just saying that I love Intruder. I put it on one of my top 10 lists many years ago, and nice. I still love the movie so well. So this was a not a Milky Way treasure, but not a Milky Way dud either. So it's one of those like in between things. But I still enjoy revisiting Beyond Hyperthermia for the reasons that we said. You know, for Lao Ching-Wan, for Wu Qianlian, and just confirming that they when they're you know on the top of their game, which I think you can argue is it happens in this movie.
Yeah,
It's pretty good, and a shame they didn't get a perfect movie to go along with that. But you know, it's not always you can extract that either, because the bad elements can be so goddamn bad that the good stuff actually gets buried by it. Thankfully, that doesn't happen.
No, it's even. I mean, not one kind of overbears the other. It's even in terms of not one kind of puts you off the other. If I'm making sense,
mm-hmm. Oh yeah,
it's not so bad, or it's not so bad that it sinks it, or it's not so good that it completely changed my opinion on it. It kind of sits straight in the middle. There'll be better work to come, we should just say.
Indeed, it will. And that's us done. Some contact information before we sign off. And this has been Podcast on Fire at the Podcast on Fire Network. PodcastOnFire.com is the website for this and all the other shows. PodcastOnFire@googlemail.com is the email. And you can check out the forum if you registered before. PodcastOnFire.com/forum. Members only archive is still there, so you can listen to all those hours of extra stuff. But we also produced a few hours of extra stuff in the bonus episode section of the website. So check that out. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/POF Network, and come on in and interact with us in the Podcast on Fire Network discussion group. Type in Podcast on Fire Network in the search box and that'll pop up, and you can be added instantly, almost anyway. You have to go through me first. And follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/podcastonfire. Check out my writing, sogoodreviews.com, and the brief video reviews of the main reviews are on sleazykvideo.com. And follow me on Twitter as well, twitter.com/SoGoodReviews. Go follow me for this kind of stuff, but also for Laserdisc Saturday type of tweets. Today is Laserdisc Saturday, so tonight it's going to be Cannibal Ferox is the hashtag. or Lenzi, you know, because it's directed by Umberto Lenzi. So, because I'm going to have time to get this show out, so you know, follow me doing that crap. Also subscribe to the Podcast on Fire Network on iTunes. Leave us a rating and comment if you like the show. That would be highly appreciated and would mean the world to me to see that. And you can also stream us on Stitcher, which is what I prefer with my podcasts. So download the application to your desktop or to your smartphone. Application is free. Just go to your nearest app store. Once you're in Stitcher, type in Podcast on Fire Network and all the shows, including the latest one, Two-Fisted Podcast, can now be added individually. And Tom KW has his review archive on VCinema, latest edition being the Jackie Chan movie Little Big Soldier.
Yep.
So check that out, and future post and post reviews, and hopefully future reviews.
Yeah, got some interesting stuff coming down.
Goody. Okay, that's us. So thank you for this week, and we're not sure if next week necessarily is going to be the Milky Way Treasures continuation. We'll announce that and all of that, but this has been the first part and highly enjoyable one at that. So this has been Kenny B, and with me was Tom KW.
The only bullet that counts is the last one.
We'll let listeners figure out that by themselves. Hint, go to YouTube, type in Beyond Hypothermia, and have fun.
Good hint.